The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 5, text number 7, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on September 28, 2008, in Bruges, Belgium.
Chapter number 5, text number 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yoga Yukto Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriya Sarvabhutatma Bhutatma Kurvanapi Nalipyate. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the Savior of the Fallen Souls, Patita Pavana. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. And he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as has already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Shri Guru, Shri Jata
Pada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagra Jata Sagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
This is a pretty special person described here by Krishna. Someone who is very dear to everyone. Why is he dear to everyone? Because everyone's dear to him. You see? If there's a person who finds you to be dear to them, don't you naturally feel that they are dear to you? It is natural psychology. If someone loves you, you see, you're very dear to them. Don't you want to love them in return? So, because the pure devotee loves everyone, people are inclined to love him back. Prabhupada is a perfect example. Everywhere he went, he had such loving relationships. Even when he was staying on John Lennon's estate, he had a wonderful relationship with the old gardener. Robert used to talk with the gardener and had wonderful conversations with the old man, the gardener. They were comparing each other's teeth. They were both old men. Who had more teeth left? Prabhupada knew how to relate to the people, you know, on their level, you know. You see? So Prabhupada took him like a dear friend. And he reciprocated in that way with Prabhupada. So, this is the symptom of pure devotee of Krishna. He really likes, he really has love and affection for everyone. Even if they're a Mayavadi or an atheist or whatever they may be, you see, it doesn't matter what their philosophical persuasion is. Pure devotee loves everyone. I mean, they could be this, they could be that, white, black, male, female, whatever designation, it doesn't matter. Pure devotee loves everyone. That's finished. That's one of the definitions of a pure devotee. This is also described in chapter 11. What is that word? Mat karma krin mat paramo mat bhakta sangha varajita nirvaiva sarva bhuteshu. Yasumam eti pandava. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of mental speculation and fruitive activities, who works for me, who makes me the goal of his life, and who is, how is that next line? And he's dear, and see, he's, it's 11:54. That was the line I wanted to draw our attention to. 11:55. And who is friendly to every living being. That's right. certainly comes to me. So that's the same principle. And Prabhupada says this verse, 1155, is actually the essence of the entire Bhagavad Gita. In other words, if you really want to be Krishna conscious, you've got to be friendly. That's one of the symptoms of someone who's actually Krishna conscious. They're friendly to everybody. They don't have an enemy. They're friendly to everyone. And be confirmed by this verse here today, 5:7. And it's also reconfirmed in Sloka 5:29 in Prabhupada's explanation of 5:29. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshvaram surhidam sarvabhutanam gyatvimam shantam richachi. One who sees me as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the best friend of all living entities certainly becomes peaceful and prosperous. So Prabhupada explains, Krishna is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He is the best friend of all living entities. But his devotee also is. So not only is the devotee the friend to everyone, but actually he's the best friend of everyone. He's everyone's best friend. You see? I personally experienced that. I used to have different pen pals when I was, you know, a teenager. People would write me letters. I went to the New York State Fair when I was a small kid, and I signed up for a pen pal at some booth. And some had a pen pal in Canada. Somebody was writing me. The letters were okay, but when I got letters from Prabhupada, and my old high school friend used to write me when I was in college, so I had some pen pals, but there was nobody like who wrote a letter like Prabhupada. When I started corresponding with Srila Prabhupada and had a correspondence with him, I've never seen letters like that from anyone. There was just so much love coming through those letters. It was an inconceivable amount of love came through those letters. And that, I mean, who was I? And I was just some, you know, crazy, from my perspective, I was just a crazy lunatic that somehow was allowed to live in the temple. I mean, that's the way I saw myself anyway. I'm just a charity case, you know. But Prabhupada was treating me with so much compassion. It was just amazing how much kindness he poured on me. Treating me like his dear son. I mean, it was just amazing. So actually, that's why it's stated that it's by the mercy of the spiritual master that one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness. And that's why it's called causeless mercy. See, here was some crazy lunatic, at least from my perspective, and Prabhupada is showering all this mercy on me. I didn't see any reason why I deserved it, and I didn't, actually. It's called causeless mercy. He showered all this mercy on me, and it was giving me life. The more he showered mercy on me, the more I became enlivened and enthused to give my life to serving Prabhupada. So this is how the process works. We get the mercy of the spiritual master. We get the mercy of Vaishnavas. We feel how Prabhupada's mercy is coming through all these different channels. And we become more and more inspired and enlivened to give ourselves completely to serving Prabhupada's movement. And by doing that, all auspiciousness comes. The Sankirtan movement bestows all auspiciousness. Sankirtan yagya, just like in the previous ages, they would do these big yagyas in the Treta Yuga to get different things. Lord Vishnu would even come. So this Sankirtan Yoga, inaugurated by ISKCON, by Prabhupada, is ISKCON movement. This will bestow all prosperity, all peace, all happiness, all auspicious things upon the entire human society. So anybody who associates with this movement, who becomes in a mood of serving this mission of Srila Prabhupada, to the extent that they take up this mood of serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada, they will feel how so many blessings are showering upon them at every minute, actually. And when one reaches the point of being absolutely, totally engrossed with every thought, word, and deed in the Sankirtan Yajna, then what is the result? Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paripasate tesham nichapiyuktanam yogachemam bahamyam. That is the result. You know the Sanskrit? Yeah. Krishna explains that for one who worships me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what he has and I carry what he lacks. In other words, Prabhupada actually gave another translation. Krishna says, I deliver whatever you are lacking to your front door. Can you imagine? Especially in some of these Amsterdam apartments where you got to go up 4 flights, you know, it's a trouble, you know, you got to go get a gallon of milk, you know, you go all the way down, all the way up. But Krishna will come all the way up to the 4th floor to deliver whatever you need. That's what Prabhupada said. He could personally deliver to your door whatever you need. You may say, well, how is that possible that Krishna would personally deliver? But actually, it's like that. Krishna, for one who becomes totally, completely engrossed, every thought, word, and deed in serving this mission of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna takes personal care of that devotee. So you have nothing to lose by supporting this movement. That's the point. You have everything. The more you can support this movement, the more Krishna will support you. And he is not a poor person that would have difficulty supporting you. He happens to be really rich. He makes Bill Gates look like a beggar in the street. That's how rich he is. And someone says, well, how are you going to afford to do this? How are you going to afford to do that? How can you afford to travel all over the world with your wife? This is my wife, Vishnupriya Devi. The two of us travel all over the world. We buy these round-the-world tickets. They're not cheap. People say, well, how do you do them? I say, I have a rich father. He pays for it. The fact is that the more we give ourselves to Krishna, the more he takes personal care of us. You know, we may not have any assets. We may not have any good intelligence. We may be lacking in all ways. But if we simply are devoted to Krishna, then everything comes. It's amazing. Shyamasundara Prabhu, my godbrother, told a story in the early days of ISKCON. That's the original center. The second center was 518 Frederick Street. That was the first temple I walked into. I was blessed with the opportunity of setting foot into that historic storefront in December of 1968, 518 Frederick Street. But they were struggling to keep that center open. How they going to... There was no Sankirtan collection, just Jayananda was driving the cab, and that was it. That was the whole temple. What he earned from his cab business was the... So there was some struggles sometimes to keep the temple open. At one point, there was how they going to pay the rent. So in the early morning, Shyamasundara was walking through Haight-Ashbury, the neighborhood, and all these $100 bills were just blowing down the street. And that's how they paid the rent then. Can you imagine how many times you've seen $100 bills blowing down the street, a whole bunch of them blowing down the street? Is it? So, the point is, if we take up this mood of devotion, then Krishna bestows all auspiciousness upon us. Whether we're a monk living in an ashram, whether we're a businessman running a business, or a worker working for one of these corporations, whatever we may be doing, a student going to school, whatever you're doing, if you will fully dedicate yourself to Krishna according to your occupation. You fully dedicate from now on. This is for Krishna. My life is completely for Krishna. If you'll just make that determination, I guarantee you, you'll see your life completely flip into the most wonderful, sweet adventure. You'll feel like you're floating on air. You'll feel how you're living in a spiritual existence at every minute. Just by saying, okay, from now on, everything's for Krishna. I've tried to make myself the center of the universe for I don't know how many lifetimes, and I failed to do so. So I give up. I surrender. In warfare, you surrender. Like this, right? In Lord Chaitanya's movement, we dance like this. It means I surrender. So in the kirtan, feel free to raise your arms in the air. Even now, everyone can raise their arms. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a sign of surrender. It's also a sign of ecstasy. Because surrendering to Krishna is ecstatic. So anyway, if you really get to the essence of what Krishna consciousness is, you'll find, as Prabhupada affirmed, it's simply wonderful. Sometimes we have difficulties with it because we get too mental about the whole thing. We don't really, you know, we get too analytical. We have to go beyond the plane of mental speculation and actually enter into the pure essence of what bhakti is, which is to love the supreme source of all existence at every minute. Of course, we use our intelligence to understand that bhakti, that love, but sometimes if we get too analytical, we can lose the bhakti. So we want to have a balance of bhakti and Vedanta. Like Prabhupada's name, bhakti, Vedanta. Both are good, but there has to be a good mix. Bhakti and Vedanta. So we use our intelligence to understand how these teachings are true. We don't say, are they true or not? We don't use our intelligence in that way. Well, they may be true, they may not be true. Of course, in the beginning, one has that is a natural thing. But once you're actually convinced that Krishna consciousness is the absolute truth, that Prabhupada is a pure devotee, then one should use one's intelligence to understand how are these statements true, not if they are true or not. How is it that this is true? Sometimes we may read something in the books that it may be incomprehensible to us. When that happens, we don't say, is it true or not? We say, no. We say, how is it that this is true? This is how we approach it. That is called bhakti Vedanta. Vedanta based on faith in the words of the pure devotee and in the words of Krishna. This principle that I'm stating is confirmed in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6:23. Yashya deve para bhakti tata deve tata guru tasyaite kyatita hyarta prakashyanti mahatmanaha. Only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and the words of Krishna are the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So, that faith, that staunch and flinching faith in the words of the great acharyas and in the words of Krishna is spoken in Bhagavad Gita. If you have those two things very solid, then you become completely realized in the Vedic wisdom. You can actually have your own personal realizations of the Vedic wisdom. Because actually that Vedic wisdom is there within the hearts of all of us. It's already there. After all, we are inhabitants of the spiritual world, but due to being covered by envy, our little experiment, our fling with Maya, you see, we become covered temporarily by the modes of nature. But if one, through purifying the consciousness, one regains one's original pure state of consciousness, then all the Vedic wisdom is there within you. Actually, it's all there within you already. Simply you have to uncover it by purifying the consciousness. Everyone is actually a perfectly self-realized being, tree kalagya, but it's covered by now, that's all. Covered by the modes of nature, that's all. We're all perfectly self-realized souls who just, we fell asleep. We went into a dream state called, I'm a man, I'm a woman. It's a dream state. I'm Dutch, I'm British, I'm American, I'm Indian. It's a dream state, you see. I'm human being, dream state. We're identifying with the garment. So now we have the opportunity, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, to get out of this conscious, covered consciousness and come to the original, natural, pure, uncovered state of consciousness, which is pure, unadulterated bliss, pure knowledge, Krishna consciousness. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah.
Bhakti Vedanta.
Literally, bhakti means devotion, and Veda means knowledge, and anta means the end. So the ultimate knowledge is called Vedanta. And Prabhupada was given that title by his godbrothers, Bhakti Vedanta. So he is ultimate knowledge combined with devotion. That is the most powerful position. If one just has knowledge but he doesn't have bhakti, then he becomes, let's say he's a sentimentalist, right? He can become a fanatic, like one of these people that, you know, blows the terroristic acts and things like that. But if he simply has, if he has bhakti, but he doesn't have any knowledge, he can become a sentimentalist or a fanatic. If he has knowledge, but he doesn't have any devotion, then he's a mental speculator who speculates that, well, you know, life is created, comes out of matter, there's no God. So on the one hand, you have the person who speculates, who doesn't have any devotion. He becomes atheistic science. He just wants to say that everything is matter, there's nothing beyond matter. That is knowledge without any devotion. Devotion without knowledge, they become fanatical. They don't have a philosophical basis for their belief in the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. So either if you have one without the other, then neither is not good. You need both are required. You need to have a strong philosophical basis for understanding the Supreme Person, the source of all existence, Krishna. So if you have both of those, then you're properly situated. Anything else? Yeah.
I was just wondering, where is the balance supposed to come between the material designation, as you were mentioned, that we are supposed to be in a dream, and the actual process of bhakti, of sadhana itself? Because in many regards, the sadhana itself is very much as well based on the material designation of male, female, and so on. Even, for example, in a temple, it's usually split between men and female.
Right.
And actually, in the history of ISKCON, we could see as well that sometimes there were like voices rising, which had a very almost to say fanatical perspectives against female and other or groups of people within the movement.
It could be, well, the this is a very important point. If that that balancing point is very important. This point is actually given by Srila Rupa Goswami. It has to be that balance. And we have rules and regulations, and one can be one can be neglectful of them, or be fanatic, or apply them fanatically. So either way, it's a cause for fall down. If you go to either extreme, you're in problems. So your question is very good. What is the proper balance? The Sanskrit niyam, in Sanskrit language, niyam refers to the rules and niyam agraha. Yes, niyam refers to rules and regulations. In agraha, there's agraha and agraha, two different words. And one means to be too neglectful, and the other means to be too much into them. So agraha and agraha. But in Sanskrit language, according to the rule known as santi, when if there's two A's which come against each other, one word ends in an A, and the next word begins in an A, that combination, they're pronounced together as one long A. So niyam, it's niyama. If niyama comes against agraha, it becomes niyamagraha. Niyama is a short A, and then agraha is a short A, so niyam agraha. But then the rule also is, if a short A comes against a long A, it also becomes niyam agraha. So whether you niyam agraha in that verse has a dual meaning. It means to be too neglectful of the rules and regulations, or to be fanatical in your application of them. So how do you figure it out? That's why we need, that's why Prabhupada's example is the most important thing. You know, we can sit around all day and wrangle, you know, about the points. But Prabhupada is the perfect balance. I remember the devotees were saying, Prabhupada, the women should stand in the back of the temple room. And one tape. And Prabhupada was saying that and Lord Chaitanya let a woman stand on his shoulders to have darshan. The devotees said to Prabhupada, we shouldn't imitate that. Prabhupada didn't say a word. So, there's so many examples, but Prabhupada is the perfect. He's the perfect example of everything. The real principle is compassion, as we studied in this verse. If one is actually the well-wisher, in the mood of serving all the devotees. And he's not in the mood of exploiting. He's really in the mood of serving and helping that person to be Krishna conscious. Then Krishna will give the intelligence. What is the practical, the proper application of the different injunctions? Sometimes the rules have to be broken also. Prabhupada gave himself as an example. There's a rule that, you know, you can't, any food that you're going to offer to Krishna, it has to be kept in a clean place. You wouldn't keep it in some refrigerator with meat in it. That food, those vegetables that had been sitting next to some meat would not be offerable to Krishna. That's a brahminical principle, you see. So when Prabhupada came to America, he was staying with, I think his name was Carl at the time. Anyway, he stayed with one young man who later on became his disciple. He had nowhere to stay. He was staying with them for several days. And he was keeping his vegetables in the refrigerator, and he saw something. He looked like meat. He said, what is that? He said, oh, that's for the cats.
Agrawal family.
No. That was not the Agrawal family. This was in, after he came to New York City. Yeah, it wasn't the Agrawal family. This person later on became his disciple, he said. And then Sali Agrawal did not become a disciple. So now he was staying with one young man and his girlfriend, and there was meat, cat food in the refrigerator. So Prabhupada, he was making the point that if I were to cry, oh, I've broken my rules and regulations, you see. He wouldn't have been able to function. He wouldn't have been able to start this movement. So Prabhupada said the rules and regulations have to be, sometimes they have to be for a higher purpose, they have to be broken. But he said, in the presence of your spiritual master, and those when he was not living on the planet, you should always take permission before you have to do something that may break a principle. Not without his permission, Prabhupada said. Another example he gave was Govinda Das. He was the personal servant of Lord Chaitanya. So, one day, it's Lord Govinda Das, he would give Lord Chaitanya his daily massage. So he had to be. So one day, Lord Chaitanya fell asleep right in the doorway, blocking the doorway. So Govinda Das, in order to massage him, he had to step over his body, which is another rule. You never step over the body of, especially of a devotee, especially of God Himself. You never step over the body of a devotee. But he did it so he could massage Lord Chaitanya. So the prasadam time came. And he didn't go because he didn't want to step. So Lord Chaitanya woke up. He said, Govinda, why are you? What are you doing here? Why didn't you, have you taken your lunch? He said, no, I couldn't cross over your body. He said, but how did you get in here? He said, but that was for your service, but not for my sense gratification. So sometimes for service, one may have to violate a principle like stepping over Lord Chaitanya's body. But for one's sense gratification, one should never break any principle.
Prabhupada also said about the preaching in Russia.
Oh, he told them they could eat meat if they had to, just to preach in Russia. And they didn't have to. But he actually authorized them to eat meat if they had to, for the sake of starting our movement in Russia. So the rules are there to help us. They're our servants to help us to be Krishna conscious. We have to always remember them. They're for the sake of, the rules are not there for their own sake. The one principle is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. The rules are there to help us to be Krishna conscious. So it's a question of breaking a rule, we feel it's necessary, then we should consult with the senior disciples who represent Prabhupada. Get their permission. We feel that some rule needs to be broken, but there's a Krishna conscious reason to break a rule. But as a rule, we follow the rule. Because they're there to help us to be Krishna conscious.
Yeah, but I refer as well in some regards that you have situations where, for example, I remember in the early days there was a suggestion to move all women to Australia, I think it was, and other weird ideas.
Yeah, well, that was Prabhupada nipped that whole idea. There was a big, the Radharamadar, the days of the Radharamadar party, they were to all kinds of talk of things like that. And the temple presidents were completely at odds with Tamal Krishna Goswami over all of these fanatical ideas of sending all the women had to leave the temples and go stay on the farms, and the householders also, all the householder men, they're also contaminated. They should all go out to the rural, can keep the temples pure, brahmacharis and sannyasis only, some kind of an idea like that. So, of course, the temple presidents are mostly grihasthas, and they were really up in arms. There was a whole thing, and the thing came finally to a head in Mayapur. And actually, Prabhupada called right one morning after Mangal Arati, called Tamal Krishnamaraj to his room. And Tamal Krishnamaraj, they had had a conversation the afternoon before. They were talking about all this conflict going on. And Tamal Krishnamaraj kind of, you could say in a loose, joking way, said, maybe I should just go to the moon. Maybe I should just go to China, Prabhupada. In a joking way, because of all this conflict. And the next morning after Mangal Arati, Prabhupada's servant came down, said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And he knew, he said, I shouldn't have said that. He knew, immediately knew. I shouldn't have said that I should go to China. He just knew that Prabhupada's going to order me to go to China. And sure enough, he went to Prabhupada's room and said, you should go to China. And he started arguing with Prabhupada why he shouldn't go. What about my party is the largest book distributor party, you know, this and this and this. And Prabhupada's lips were quivering in anger because his disciple was fighting with him. He wasn't surrendering. His lips were quivering with anger. And he finally said, either you stay here in Mayapur. He said, I take away your Radharamana party. You either stay here in Mayapur and chant, or you go to China, and that's it. And he went out on the balcony, and he announced, all the devotees were out there. He announced, everyone, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is going to China, and all the devotees cheered. So Prabhupada was, he was very compassionate. He was very, very compassionate. So we have to remember that compassionate nature of the pure devotee, you see. And if we do that, then Krishna will, and we try to imbibe that same mood of compassion in our own hearts, and then Krishna from within the heart will give us all guidance exactly how to proceed in our Krishna consciousness. It'll be very clear. If we're acting out of compassion and not out of a desire for sense enjoyment, then Krishna will give all good intelligence. How to carry on in this mood, the Prabhupada, you see, which is just giving mercy, giving mercy, giving mercy, giving mercy. Any other questions? Everyone's satisfied now? Yeah.
You have been reading that our senses are imperfect. Consequently, the knowledge which we also gain through our senses is bound to be imperfect.
Yes.
And we also read that the knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the perfect knowledge.
Yes.
So just comparing both of them, how can we ever conceive that in this material...
How can we understand, since our senses are imperfect, how we can...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I understand the question. I remember when I was a young... songwriter, I wasn't a devotee yet. I was a young songwriter hanging out in Berkeley, California, writing songs like crazy, thinking my songs would save the world. I was pretty crazy at the time. Actually, I finally had to just surrender and sing Prabhupada's song. But I met a devotee on the campus and I presented the same argument to him. I said, how do you Hare Krishna people think you know the truth? How can you know the truth? I challenged him. Your senses are imperfect. Because I knew that. I'd heard the philosophy. Our senses are imperfect. So I challenged him. This was Shitsukananda, my god, who's now my godbrother. But I challenged Shitsukananda. I said, your Hare Krishna teaching is the senses are imperfect. So how would you, since your senses are imperfect, how is it possible for you to know that Krishna is God? And he went, oh. He couldn't answer. I defeated him. With using his own Hare Krishna philosophy, I defeated him. And I felt, you know, I was pretty puffed up. I thought, oh yeah, I really know a lot. You know. Of course, I later on realized. So anyway, what is the answer? Someone can raise that challenge as I did to Chitsukananda, that, you know, your philosophy is your senses are imperfect. So how with your imperfect senses can you know that Krishna is God? You can't, because your senses are imperfect. So, here's the answer. Actually, your senses are perfect, ultimately. At the present moment, they are covered by imperfections in the form, because you're the cloud of the modes of nature is covering your senses. So, if you can bring your senses into contact with Krishna, your imperfect senses, if they come into contact with Krishna in any form, the deity, the bhishadam, the devotees, the spiritual master, the books, the holy names, devotional service, so many ways you can connect with Krishna. And what happens is, by the contact with that pure transcendental thing, your senses begin to get purified. And you actually regain your original perfect senses, which will allow you eventually to directly perceive Krishna face to face, eye to eye. So the answer is that with your imperfect senses, you can't. It's a fact. But through this process, your senses will become perfect. In the beginning, they become 1% perfect. Even with a little faith you get, they become 1% perfect, and then 2%, and gradually they become 100% perfect. So that you can perfectly experience Krishna with every minute, directly with your own senses. That's a thing. This is confirmed by Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita. Preman jana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa daiva hridayeshu valokayanti yang shama shundaram jagunasvarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. That when your eyes are anointed with the prem anjana, the ointment of love of God, then you will see Krishna everywhere within your heart and everywhere externally, wherever you go. So you simply have to make those by contacting pure transcendental manifestations of Krishna. You and associating as much as possible, especially the Maha Mantras gives that facility. Then you will, your senses will gradually become uncovered. All the imperfections will melt away. You'll gain perfect senses. Your original perfect senses that you had before you entered this material existence, they'll begin to become fully manifested. And you'll be really happy. Be really enlightened. You'll feel pretty cool. Actually, there's nothing more cool than being Krishna conscious. If you want to be cool, be Krishna conscious. It's cool, Prabhu. Anything else?
Yes? Amanda, what you will say about the animals? We all are surrounded by animals, domestic animals.
Yes, don't eat them.
I never eat them. Whenever I start chanting, that the animals are attached to the sound of chanting. And then I think...
The animals are attracted when you chant?
Yes.
That's very nice.
And then my question to you is...
That's very nice. Lord Chaitanya also attracted the animals. You must be chanting very nicely, because Lord Chaitanya, when he was going through Jarakhand forest, all the animals were attracted to him. They were actually dancing in the kirtan. Mm. So you should go out and preach. There's many animals, two-legged animals, walking up and down the street. You may go out and make them devotees.
Would it mean something for their previous lives? That's my question. Would it mean something to the following life of those animals?
Will it mean something for them? Oh, yes. Prabhupada, my godbrother, he was a little boy at the time, actually, Dwarkadish Das. He got initiated when he was a little boy. Prabhupada used to affectionately call him Mr. DDD, Dwarkadish Das. But he wrote Prabhupada a letter one time. He said, Prabhupada, we went to the duck pond and we fed the ducks some prasadam. And Prabhupada wrote him back. He said, those ducks will become human beings in the next life. So if you can somehow bless the animals with the holy names of prasadam, their evolution through the 8,000,000 species will be accelerated. They can skip a bunch of lives and births and deaths and come directly to the human form. So you're doing the greatest good for those animals. You should chant for the animals. Prabhupada actually told Govindadas he did. There was a, what's that called? A snail? Yeah. Huh?
Slug.
A slug. You know that, I don't know, but you know that the slug is a grotesque thing. It just kind of oozes along, you know. It's the most gross worm-like thing you've ever seen. It's a slug. And Govindadas, he said, ooh, Prabhupada, look, a slug. Prabhupada said, chant to the poor creature. So Govindadas, he was chanting to the slug on Prabhupada's word to bless the poor creature that he could advance on the path back to home by hearing the holy name. So any other questions? Is everybody ready now for the next program? Looks like we're ready for the next program now. So we thank you all very much. Raja Vidrashimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.